Welcome to Aspire. I'm your host, Gregory Penn, and I'm grateful you chose to be with me on this 18th day of January. Oh, 2020. It happens fast, doesn't it? Here we are. Do you ever think you'd see 2020? Well, here we are at 2020. I think it's wonderful. And we get to take a look at some of the things that are on people's minds here on Aspire. I am very grateful for all of the little New Year's greetings and Christmas greetings I got from listeners all over the country. And I want to thank you for your kindness and for even thinking of me. And today we're going to go on in a kind of a quasi-series of emails that I have been getting regarding different subjects in the realm of the spiritual. So let's get on with it. I want to thank my sponsors before I begin. I want to thank those of you who made year-end donations. I want to thank all of you who take the time to write and offer your questions. They're very important, not only to me, but to other people. And you have no idea how much you help humankind by being so generous with your questions. It's very, very important. Let's get to the first one. Greg, it is a new year. What is, in your opinion, should never say that, the most important thing in life? And this is from Ross in Colorado. The most important, I don't feel, Ross, that the most important is a thing, okay? A T-H-I-N-G. It is not a thing, something that you experience in the outer world, something you get in the outer world. It's not an object. It's not an ideal. It's not a thought. It's not a thing, okay? I want to get that over to you. And I know that the reason we use these words like thing is basically because there are no other words in the dictionary for it. And I get why you would use that word. So it's not a criticism. Don't think of it that way. But it is interesting. It is an extremely interesting question you ask. What is the most important thing? If it isn't a thing, then what is it? It is something that occurs inside of a person, something that translates into an occurrence. It is the discovery of the presence of love that lives within. To me, for my experience in my own inner work, it has to do with realizing the presence of something greater than my human love. Something that serves a much deeper, more, shall we say, esoteric kind of experience. Even esoteric is not a good word for what I'm trying to say. You have to have a semblance of what the beauty and meaning of a life is here on Earth. We live a very difficult life on this world, on this planet. We live a very difficult life. And the reason it is difficult is because of the atmosphere that we create through our mind, our body, our sense of spiritual indifference. And as long as spiritual indifference reigns supreme in our life, we are going to find that we have a lot of very difficult things to overcome in this world, because we only regard the science of this world, the physicality of it, and not the spirituality of it, we place ourselves in awkward positions, to say the least, where we say and do things that our karma repeats over and over and over again in our individual lives, showing us that there is another path and we need to think beyond the box of our self-preservation and survival. And because this is very hard for most of us to do, we tend to fall into laws and principles that are here on Earth in an untimely, unkind, unloving way. This planet, because of indifference, because of assumption, spiritual indifference, because of assumption, because of the fear of death, because of all sorts of biological assumptions and ignorances about who and what we are based on genealogy and DNA, we make some very bad decisions about living. And because we make these very bad decisions that are based on human logic and reasoning, we tend to fall off the planet here. We tend to fall off what is really important and necessary. It is hard for the average person who thinks logically and reasonably in and of their logical and reasonable mind what life is all about, what is really important in life. And that is a difficulty we have because we're not meditative. We do not want to explore what it would be like or discipline ourselves to see what it would be like to have a mind that is outside of the human vernacular, the human reasoning, the human logic. We're just not interested in that. We are only interested in what we can think. And because we are only interested in what we can think, we tend to live our life from the premise of those very small thoughts that we have, that very small mind, and live in the concept of a thought rather than in the flow of the heart, the flow of love, the flow of consciousness. We live in the concept of thoughts. So the most important thing, as you put it in my opinion, is liberation from all of that. And to liberate myself from that, I have to see what the Buddha meant when he said, "See how you love and what keeps you from the journey." This is a very important statement. See how you love and what keeps you from the journey. Love is not emotion. And if I relegate love to just pure emotionality, then I'm going to miss what it really is all about, and I'll live a very mundane life, a pedestrian mentality kind of experience. And if you want to live like that, which a lot of people are very comfortable doing, and it's their life, then fine and dandy. But for those who seek a deeper, more a conscious approach to life, who are interested in something beyond the concept of a thought, the precept of a thought, the whole idea of how we think in terms of right and wrong, good and bad, for those who are seeking to go beyond all of that, this whole idea of change of venue in thinking, no longer admiring the concept of a thought, the precept of a thought, but seeing where the thought comes from. Once you see where your thoughts come from, their origins, you will never ever go back to them again. You won't want to. They belong to someone else. We are living other people's lives, not our own. And that would be the great liberation, I think, for human beings, to have that kind of liberation, to see how we love and realize that love is not something that we believe in as unconditional. There are very important conditions to the state of love. In my journal next month in February, and the discourses for February, the message of the month for February will be about the condition of the unconditional. Because love really is not unconditional. It is very demanding. And very few people would be willing to do it because we are always looking for something to happen to us in the physical, not the spiritual. If you ask the average person what they want to mature into. It would never be something spiritual. It would be something mental. It would be something intellectual. It would be something biological. It would be something in the physicality. And we miss. We just simply miss. Meditation is such an easy thing to do and so difficult for those who want to make it difficult. It just really is a simple thing to do. It is just to sit and want nothing with all of your heart. That's all it really is. To simply want nothing with all of your heart. Who'd have thought that'd be so difficult? Ross, I hope that helped you. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. Get what I mean, Jelly Bean? Please forgive me. Namaste. Next one comes from Ron in Las Vegas, Nevada. What is truth, Ron? Truth is something that is constant in the universe that has nothing to do with anything that Greg Penn can think. Whenever you kind of conceive of the idea of truth, what are we talking about? What is truth? Truth is something that translates into understanding the spiritual environment we are in, not platitudes, longitudes, thoughts, concepts. It has nothing to do with any of that. You could say that, you know, a great truth would be anything that would be uttered by the Buddha or Jesus in the Beatitudes or any of his powerful teachings or Lhasa in the Tao. You could say it was any and all of those things. You could look at them and think, oh, that's a truth. But those truths turn into thoughts in people. You utter a truth to an audience, like I'm doing right now, some truth, and it turns into a concept. It turns into a thing. It doesn't matter what the truth is, it turns into a thing, because the human mind has to conceptualize everything and anything and make it fit the intellect that it has. So if my intellect is based on the premise of objects and things, I'm keeping it really simple, the syntax of my thinking is about objects, things that I can contemplate, then truth is no longer truth. You've taken the soul out of the kiss, as it were. You miss the beauty of it, because the mind functions as a mechanism. That's what it's supposed to do. There is the mind that is, of course, the Ron mind, the Greg mind, and we can kind of, if we want, try to synthesize them together, unite them together, and come up with an idea or an ideal or whatever, and agree that we agree on this one thought. And we can do this until the cows come home. It really doesn't matter. What really matters is, can I get the authentic? Can I come to a place where the greatest truth is revealed as a truth, not through thought, not as thought? Let me give you an example. Let's take a sunrise. And as the sun comes up, you see this great beauty. How do you describe that beauty, Ron? Well, you could use words and poetry, even haiku, which is an attempt at bringing about the experience of beauty. But beauty is intrinsic to a person. And the beauty of a sunrise gives way to interpretation of thought, interpretation of everything. And you got to look at it and say, is this as far as it goes for me? is a truth, the interpretation of a concept, a thought? Is that what I'm doing when I am sitting here talking to you? Am I speaking truths that you can correlate, assimilate through your mental acuity, and come up with your own idea of what truth is? The greatest truths are imparted nonverbally. The greatest truths are recognized through silence. And they do not affect the intellect of a person at all. In fact, the average person would hear the truth and think of it as inconsequential to their life or maybe even their own intellect and say, well, that's not it. It's got to be better than that. We're looking for sleight of hand, trickery. When we hear a truth, we want it to be something that is absolutely absolute. And no truth is absolute. Because as you mature on and on and on in the process of your own awakening, you go through different phases and levels. You go through different experiences within yourself that have nothing really to do with thought itself. Thought itself doesn't mean anything. So when I am sitting here talking to you right now, am I speaking truths? Well, to the average person who is not meditative, who is not, shall we say, comfortable with silence and does not understand the nature of silence, no. There has to be words spoken. It has to make sense to them. It has to be logical. I will have students, this is a 100% thing. I have students that I sit with every week in sessions and we're working on, you know, a truth or whatever. And all of a sudden, this great, big, beautiful thing will come out of them. Just so beautiful, so gorgeous. I can't even tell you how beautiful it is. And then they'll hear themselves saying it and go, Greg, does that make sense? Truth never makes sense. And I sit there and giggle. They don't get it. They hear me talk. Most of the time, people listening to me only hear every third or fourth word I say because they're stuck on trying to understand through their intellect what I have said maybe three, four, five words ago. They can't follow the flow. They can't live in the flow. Why? Because their mental acuity is to try to conquer, to understand, and to grasp something intellectually. Truth cannot be grasped. Truth can't be taught. It must be caught. You catch it in the net of silence. And if you're trying to make sense of it, so it relates to your biological, physiological, worldly life, you will reduce that truth down at best, if you can even recognize it, to a moral. And that'll be as far as it'll ever go. And morals are very, very low-level kinds of, what do you want to call them? Platitudes and longitudes of thinking. You got to have morals in this world or people would just run amok. They don't have the heart, the sense of love, the sense of the ultimate truth to really understand what they're involved in. They don't get it. And the worst part about it is, it isn't that they don't get it. It's more than that. They don't want to get it. When's the last time you sat down with yourself and decided you were going to expand your mind beyond the premise of your genetic heritage, where you were going to go beyond the ideas of right and wrong and good and bad and what made sense to you? If truth has to make sense to you, you will never understand it. You will never, ever have the joy of it. You will be exposed to it, that you will be. Just listening to this radio program, you will be exposed to it. But will you get it? Will you be able to comprehend it? See it in its bigger picture? See it in the syntax of the much bigger picture of this thing called life? Probably not. And therefore, it will be reduced down to, well, I don't know, or words, or I don't get it, or it didn't make sense kind of mentality. And as long as it's there, we miss. And we miss more than just the truth. We miss the beauty that it brings us. Thank you, Ron, for your questions. Please forgive me. Namaste. And the last question comes from Carol in Cincinnati, Ohio. Fear is important if you are fearful of right things, correct? Carol. Carol, years ago, I had a sponsor, quasi-sponsor. He used to come to the center when I was teaching formally. And he made this statement on radio that fear was good because if you're afraid, then you won't get hurt. Some things you have to be afraid of, like crossing the street. If you weren't aware of fear, then you would you might cross the street at the wrong time, get hurt. And that was really, and then his summation was, fear is an important part of our life. This comes from DNA and genetics inside of us. I could not believe how people can sit and listen to a discourse, me, on TV or here on radio, and never ever really hear what I'm saying, just pick and choose what they like and what they don't like. You have to take the whole shemaga and put it into one thing and mish it around and decide whether or not you can accept it. Fear has no part in an authentic spiritual life. Fear is not important. It is essential to people who want to survive, not those who want to live. And there is a vast difference between survival mentality and living mentality. So, no, it isn't important that you are afraid of the right things. There are no right things to be afraid of. I can see danger, Carol. I can see it. Does that make me afraid? No. I see crossing the street. It could be dangerous. I must be aware. Aware of the danger that could be there. To be afraid of that danger cancels out my awareness and makes it impossible for me to understand what I'm really up against. If you can be aware of your presence in any given situation, if you can be aware of your foolishness, if you can be aware of your ignorance, if you can be aware of your heart, if you can be aware that love is the most important thing in life, if you can be aware, many things change in our lives almost instantaneously. Then we do not need to act out of fear and hate. We do not need to act out of ignorance and pride. We can live in the state of a great love that lives within us, a great wisdom that lives in us. So fear is going to come through the body. It just is. I have fear. Everybody has fear. We have fear because we have a body. If we didn't have a body, Lhasa said, disgrace comes with having a body. If you did not have a body, there would be none. It comes, it goes, it comes, it goes. But you can't build your entire life on it. If you build your life on fear, you will miss your life entirely. See beyond the fear to what is relevant to love, what is relevant to insight, what is relevant to to loving kindness. That will change many, many, many things inside. I hope that helps. Thank you for listening, Carol. Please forgive me. Namaste. I hope this was a wonderful program for you in the beginning of this new year, or the mid part of January, eh? Have a wonderful day. We'll be back on the air tomorrow. Please forgive me, eh? Namaste.